Welcome to Witchlit, a place to talk about the craft of writing and writing the craft. I'm your host, Victoria Rashke, author, publisher, witch, and nosy Scorpio. Witchlit is brought to you by Thousand Bolt Press, a family-owned independent publisher established to produce the books we want to see in the world. Titles including Changing Paths by Yvonne Abreu, Conjuring the Commonplace by Lane Fuller and Corey Thomas Hutchison, and my latest book, Verona Green, can be purchased directly from thousandvoltpress.com or wherever you buy books.
Emma Gathrin is a staff writer at Which Way Magazine, the House of Twigs blog, the Stone Root and Bone blog, Spiral Nature blog, and Gods and Radicals. She hosts the Wild Witch podcast and has spoken at a number of UK pagan events, including the Magical Women Conference in London. She is the author of Witch Life, a practical guide to making everyday magical, and her most recent book is Season Songs, Rediscovering the Magic of the Cycles of Nature. Emma Gathrin, welcome back to Witchlit.
Oh, thank you for having me. I've been so excited to come on.
It's just so nice to have you back. I had so enjoyed our last conversation. It was like, seemed like a treat to get to have you back. So.
Yes, it was fun for me also. I had a great time.
Awesome. So, our first question for everybody is why write? And you've answered that once. So I was thinking to mix it up a little bit, be a little bit more specific, like why this book? Why Season Songs in particular?
Well, I always go on about animism. Lots of my regular readers will know that animism plays a big part in my craft. And I think that... So the Wheel of the Year is quite meaningful to us witchy folk or to some of us and to some of us pagans. But I think that a lot of the time, and certainly I felt it at times as well, it can be a little bit of a turnoff because sometimes the Sabbats might not align up, you know, with what's going on in the land where you live. And sometimes, you know, it always seems the same, doesn't it? Every remote, we might read the same information about it, or so on and so forth. And you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but I really wanted to kind of dive deep and really get people to think about what's happening in the land where they live at that time of year, at the Sabbats, and any time of year, really, just to kind of build that connection to land and begin to develop an animistic practice. So that was the kind of inspiration for this one.
Yeah, and at one point in the book, you say that this book is kind of a continuity or continuation of the first book.
Yes.
So how do you see them kind of playing together, I guess?
Yeah, because I guess at first glance, you wouldn't necessarily think they're linked other than just by me who wrote them. But I always say that Witch Life was a bit of a witch's boot up the bum. So that I wrote that during the first COVID lockdown in the UK. Which was a weird, weird time. So my day job was then and still is a small independent special school where we work exclusively with children with autism. And so I was working at home at the time. So a lot of them, you know, a lot of pupils had vulnerable needs and, you know, we have to make sure we're protecting people. So I was working at home, which was kind of weird anyway. So it meant that like my schedule was quite flexible other than when I was having like online lessons, which was, it was just a weird, weird time for everyone, I think. And I think people, it was easy to kind of feel lost. I certainly felt like I was stuck in a rut, you know, I was letting my practice kind of not fall to the wayside, but perhaps I was becoming a bit lax. So Witch Life was kind of a boost to get back into the practical nature of things. Mm-hmm. Which I think is important. And I've kind of done it the other way around. Although there's lots of exercises in Season Songs, I guess there's more of a theory behind it as well and an explanation about why some of those spells and rituals might work. And for me, that's the spirit work that comes with nature and connecting to the land and everything that brings to witchcraft. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense. And I think one of the things and you know, having read Witch Life and reading this, that I don't know, it's like, I mean, I've said this about other books, but I think it's true for me. It's like talking to a friend. Like it's always so, your writing is so inviting. Like it's never like you should with a finger wag attached, you know, it's always like, have you thought about this? And the way you describe in this book, especially like your own connection to where you live and the land that you, you know, interact with regularly and how the seasons change. And just those descriptions are so beautiful. And it's just, it was just like, you know, like a warm bath and a cup of tea to bring.
Oh, I love that. Oh, I love that so much.
But I think, you know, one of the things I think is interesting, like, especially you talk about when you wrote the first book. So did this feel different, right? Because you weren't in that like weird space we were in, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic. Was this book different, right?
Yes, I think it absolutely was. For me, you know, I think what I always say was important for me in my practice, and it goes back to reading. So I like reading, like my degree is in English literature. So I am a glorified book nerd, you know, I like to read all of the classics. I like to read the weird and the wonderful and the obscure and the mainstream, you know, and I think that's across all genres and all kind of nonfiction slash fiction, including witchy books and pagan books. But I think sometimes when you have a really difficult text that's trying to explain quite complex ideas, I think it's fine if somebody has an academic kind of background and is able to kind of unpick the language. But I think for a book that aims to just kind of get people to think about the land where they live and their connection to it, I really wanted it to be accessible to people. And I really wanted people to feel like, you know, it's like coming back home to a friend, you know. So there's lots of like recollections in there from key moments where like things have happened in my own life and my own practice that have been so meaningful and had such a profound impact. And I think I really wanted to get people to consider, you know, their own experiences. I think one of the things that I loved about writing this book, so you say what was different. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things about this that was different was in kind of thinking about some of those most poignant moments in my path, it's rediscovering memories. And like I was writing these stories, and as I was writing one story, it was, you know, making me think about other experiences that I'd forgotten about for years. And for me, you know, that kind of rediscovery and looking back through mm-hmm. the lens of the experiences that we've gained is so important. I think we do it all the time when in teaching, you know, we're always getting the kids to think about what's going on, try the thing, then come back and think about it some more, and then go away and try it again, because it's always that layering and building up. And I think it's the same for everyone in all kind of aspects of life. And I think it's the same with witchcraft. So, you know, is it a bit corny to say it's like a spiral and we're always going around and looking at things through the lens of our experiences and all of that stuff? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And I think there's even an exercise in the book, right, where you have people kind of do that, like purposely think about forgotten memories or like when you first started practicing, like, which I thought was really interesting. Cause I do think, you know, especially when you've been practicing for a long time, we evolve. And so many mm-hmm. of us kind of came through, you know, this very Wiccan influenced door where we might not be now. And I was just thinking about what that would mean to like, you know, revisit some of those early. I was just fascinated with the idea of revisiting some of those things I did early as a new witch, I guess.
Yeah, I think definitely, because there's been times in my practice, and I think, I don't know, maybe it's a younger witch thing or an inexperienced thing where, I don't know, maybe it was just me. When I was younger, I was certainly, no, I don't like this, so I'm not going to listen to any of it, and I'm gonna, but then as I've matured and maybe learned some more and I've come back and I've learned to kind of decipher what makes sense to me and what doesn't, you know, things that before I'd written off have kind of taken on new meaning. So I think it is important, sometimes it doesn't, you know, mm-hmm. but I think some either way it's a good practice and kind of reaffirms where you are, and you know, I think it's important to kind of keep doing that so we're not stagnating.
Was there something that you revisited, like in the course of writing the book, that really stands out? That really, like, you're like, oh, I forgot about that, and I want to bring this back.
Yes. So in the book, there's like lots of different things, and I talk about lots of different moments, and they all, I think they all share an aspect of, they're quite mundane, and that everybody will have experienced something similar or can, you know, think of something similar in their own experiences. So there's, you know, there's that aspect to it. But I was writing about, in the very beginning, I'm writing about, you know, going to the woods with my mum. And as I've written that, it's made me think of something else, which I also include in the book. So when I was in primary school, I don't know what you guys call it in the States, but I was probably around 7, maybe 8 years old. And the teacher at the time, she was like one of my favourite teachers. And she had a beautiful house. And you wouldn't do it nowadays because of all the red tape, and it'd be quite weird. But she took all of her class to her house for a teddy bear's picnic. And it was, I can remember it just looked like an ordinary street. And it was probably like what we would call a townhouse now. Just very ordinary. And we all went in through the house. But then when we stepped into her back garden, it was like huge. I was like so surprised. I couldn't believe that it was that big, because it just seemed like a normal street. So instantly, you know, in my mind, I was thinking, because my favourite film as a kid was The Secret Garden. So instantly it made me think of that and all the experiences that went on there. So when I was writing the book, that was one moment. But then, like, it's like steamrolls. And I think that's the beautiful thing. And then I'm thinking about things that happened with my sisters and, you know, all kinds of stuff with friends. And it's quite beautiful to look back on that. And in a way, you know, it's good just for the experience of doing that. But I think also it allows us to explore ourselves a little bit more, and maybe get a little bit of understanding into our triggers and kind of anxieties or things we enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it was one of the things about it for me, like also having grown up in the country, you know, kind of in a rural setting, and spent, you know, as a kid, especially like during the summer, like your parents would just throw you out the door in the morning and like, you know, don't go to the lake by yourself. And if you hear the whistle, come home and, you know, be back before dark, you know, that kind of thing, which doesn't really happen much anymore, I don't think.
No.
But, and just thinking about that, and then how, as we get older and busier and work and life and stuff, and get so disconnected from that.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, like I've mostly lived in the city, and just like that disconnect. And, you know, for me, at least, because we had, you know, vulnerable people to protect, COVID was such a barrier to being out in the world in a lot of ways. And so it's really been kind of a different kind of kick up the bum to go, huh, maybe you need to do some reconnecting, Victoria. So I appreciated that aspect of it too.
Yeah. And I think that's the aim. I think we all need that kick up the bum sometimes, you know, and we all, it's easy to get caught up in the grind of every day. We've all got like responsibilities and commitments and constraints and, you know, we've all been there where there's been maybe a Sabbath or a celebration coming up that you're really excited about. But come the day, you've been at work all day, you come home, maybe it's been a bad day. Maybe, you know, you've got other worries as well that are on top of all of this. And then you just can't be bothered, or, you know, you just feel tired. And then you feel also bad about that as well.
Right.
So I think, you know, part of the work in Season Songs is that not everything is physical, you know. There is a lot of physical stuff in there to do and exercise to do, but also a lot of it is just that remembering that connection. Because I think as kids, even like inner city kids, we all have that, especially maybe as older generations where we were what we call latchkey kids, you know, just fired out, your parents worked and, you know, it's quite normal for your sister or older sibling to babysit for you. That my sister, my oldest sister, like at 14, she was looking after us in the summer holidays while parents worked and stuff like that. So, and of course she wanted to be out with her mates, and so lots of adventures ensued. But yeah, I think it's just taking the time to remember that we are familiar with the land. We have had that connection with the land, and that, you know, it's not, I think that the remembering of it allows us to remind ourselves that it's not that difficult to have connection with where we live, and it can be a part of our everyday work.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things you do beautifully, because you're so conscious in the book about the fact that, you know, not everyone can walk 20 feet out of their door and be in the woods. And so I love it. It's like, if, you know, to do this exercise, if you can't be outside, just sit in a room with the window open. Just, you know, that connection to the outdoors, you know, whatever your mobility is, or your access, or it's always available to us, even when we might think it might not be.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that stuck with me, and I can't remember where I read it, but it was a general article, and it was talking about like space and particularly built up spaces and urban spaces, and how the buildings shape that space. Mm-hmm. So it's not just an empty space, you know, and how the passage of hundreds of thousands of millions of people over hundreds and thousands of years, you know, have impacted that land and the goings on that have happened there. So, you know, everywhere is imbued with spirit. Mm-hmm. And so for me, you know, yes, nature is beautiful, and I encourage everyone to get as close to nature as they possibly can, even if that is just having the window open, listening to birdsong, feeling the wind on your face, or listening to the rain or whatever. But even if you're in a home, you know, what have those walls seen, and the energies that they've soaked up? Everywhere has an atmosphere and has a space, and being able to connect to that is a skill that is transmutable across different kind of spells and practices and rituals. And I always just think it's good practice to kind of have. And all it really takes in the beginning is just, you know, being observant and being an active part of that place as well, rather than just a passive observer.
Yeah, and it kind of made me think of, I think I want to say it was when I talked to Nicholas Pearson, because he's, you know, very involved with like gemology and crystals and that kind of stuff. And we were talking about, you know, like as an animist, sometimes it's easy to forget that, you know, literally even in your home, everything you're surrounded by either was grown or came out of mining.
Yeah.
It was either mined or grown. Everything around you, your clothes, the building itself, your computer, like everything you interact with is from the earth somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then, like, I also love a bit of hermeticism as well, chucked into my witchcraft and all mingled in. And I think, you know, when you think about the qualities of the element of earth, you know, it's exactly that, isn't it? And one of the things I like to do is when I'm maybe beginning ritual, or even just as a grounding exercise, is to, you know, really consider what the elements embody and how that relates to my everyday life. And, you know, in terms of the land, it's everything, isn't it? Everything is made up of the elements and, you know, in various mixations and what have you. So, yeah, I think it's, once you begin to scratch beneath the surface of animism, you realize that actually it's more than just, you know, the buzzword of the moment, and it can add so much meaning in so many different ways to your witchcraft practice.
Yeah, no, I like that. And I just like the idea of like the kind of, I guess, pairing animism with mindfulness about that, like just in like how we care for things. And like even in my writing, like the, you know, the tools that I use to do that, and just thinking about those things kind of in those hermetic and animistic ways also changes how you interact with things.
And I always think, you know, when like you do a ritual, and even if it's a big one or a small one, and you have all your items there, all the items mean something, don't they? You have them there because they're meaningful to you. And I think it's the same in the land around us, you know. So once we get to recognize the land around us as something that is familiar, whether that's, you know, urban settings or countryside or what have you, you know, being able to kind of identify those ritual elements in your everyday life really transforms how you see the mundane, you know. I always think, like, between all of the spheres of being, whatever you want to call them, they're not like firm barriers, but they all bleed and intermingle at those edges. And I think being able to kind of work with those energies is something that I hope comes across in the book.
Yeah, no, I think so. And like I said, it's such an inviting read to really, you know, it's like, yes, you might have drifted, but I'm not going to scold you. I'm going to invite you back to look at these things. So I think that's good. And I mean, I would recommend it for anyone who feels a little disconnected in their practice in general, you know, whatever their practice is. I think it's just a really, I mean, you know, one of the things that's the thread through the book that I really thought about is just you going outside in the morning with your tea or coffee and just, you know, whatever the season, it might require what you kind of invoke the Swedish or Norwegian. There's no such thing as bad weather, just inappropriate clothing. So,
yeah.
But I love that. It's like, it can be that simple, really.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it's about making it accessible because we've all done it before where we feel like, oh no, we've missed the set date or, mm-hmm. you know, the particular thing. So I best wait for the next one. And then if we miss the next one too, which is easily done, sometimes you look at the calendar and think, bloody hell, I thought I had weeks and it's tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, because time just seems to slip away. So I think getting used to the idea that things don't have to always be massive, and it can be as simple as being present in that moment and being an active part of the landscape. I think trouble is nowadays we've come to see ourselves as being separate from the land.
Right.
Even for people who do live in the countryside, they don't necessarily see it in the same way as an animist might. They just got a nice setting they live in. They might just think, you know. But I think really once you begin to see the land in that more personal and familiar way, yeah, I just think it kind of mm-hmm. helps you see the magic in the everyday. And for me, that helps to make it accessible.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that like the wheel of the year and this idea of cycles, I think sometimes we get very rigid about that. Like this idea of like, it has to happen on this day. Yeah. And I have to do it this time. And I've really kind of embraced the idea of the season tide.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and we talk about that around Christmas, like our Yule, like Yuletide, but it really applies to all of them.
It actually does.
And I think we kind of forget that. It's like, yeah, you know, like, so like, as we're recording this, Imolka has just happened.
Yes.
And I was like, well, I can't do the stuff I want to do on the day, mm-hmm. but the weekend is right here.
Yeah.
And so like, I will do that stuff this weekend. And yeah, I think, you know, it's easy to kind of beat ourselves up almost about being a bad witch or being a bad pagan. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we have to put that pressure on ourselves. I think it's a lot more fluid.
It absolutely is. It always cracks me up on social media around these times because, you know, I will celebrate the whole season because I think, why not? Mm-hmm. You know, but like, and I get that being rigid with dates, so having a set date makes it easier for some people because then they can plan it and they know it's coming, and it makes it easier for you. Great. It always cracks me up when like you always get the precise astrological gang online. You're like, today's the actual Samhain, so bless it, mm-hmm. you know. And I just think all of that adds to the pressure. And really, it is a tide, you know. The energies that have been happening, occurring before Imolk and now and during Imolk, they haven't just all of a sudden disappeared because the day's passed and, mm-hmm. you know, it's still there, all happening underground. You can feel it beginning to grow and maybe shift. And like, we've had about 5 named storms in the space of about 3 weeks here in the UK. And I just think that's indicative of that transforming energy mm-hmm. at this time. So, yes. I'm a big fan of celebrating when you can and how you can. And, you know, mm-hmm. I think that is what makes witchcraft at the end of the day and not a dogmatic religion.
Right. Yeah. We don't have to be at church at 9 a.m. on Sunday every day.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Like, I think that is one of the big differences. And one of the things I appreciate about it is that there is some flexibility to it. And you know, we all kind of make it our own. I don't think any two witches I know practice exactly the same in any way.
Yeah, and I think that's the fun thing about witchcraft. It's certainly what I find fascinating. I love listening to like lots of different practices, listening about the similarities and, you know, the differences are really unique and amazing as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I don't know. One of the benefits, that's, I've invented a new word. But I wanted to ask you now, because this book, as we are talking, is out here and in the UK.
Yeah.
So do you feel like there's been a difference this time, like from publishing the first book to publishing this one? Like, what is that like post book feeling, or, you know, what's that been like?
I think I'm getting slightly more used to it. I think because, I don't know, maybe a lot of writers feel this way. I am naturally a shy person. I mean, I can talk to anyone for any length of time about anything witchcraft related. But outside of that kind of arena, I'm quite introverted, you know. So after writing Witch Life, you always think, I don't know, do other writers feel this way? You think the writing is going to be the hard part. But for me, what I kind of found difficult to kind of put into practice was the stuff that came after, you know, I think it's hard for most people to kind of not brag about what they've done, but, you know, big themselves up. But you do have to kind of put yourself out there. And so I feel like it's been felt more natural this time around because I've had that experience with Witch Life, you know. Yeah. With Witch Life, that part was kind of new, and the scary part, the writing part was fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, so getting used to that and just enjoying that process, I think. I think first time around, maybe it's all new and as exciting as it is, you don't know what to expect. So this time around, I've been able to enjoy the post-production aspects of it, if you like.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, maybe from folks kind of looking in at writing and publishing, like you're right, it would seem like the writing part is really hard, but that's usually the part we enjoy. I mean, that's the craft of it, right? And it's the marketing part that sucks.
Yeah.
Or can be. I mean, you know, flogging yourself can be fun, I guess, for some people, but for me, it's horrible.
Yeah, for me, it was hard work. Yeah. Even though it's not, you know, you can be massively proud of what you've done and love it. And I do love Season Songs. You know, I would say a little bit of my heart and soul went into the book. But still, it's a weird headspace to be in. Mm-hmm. I'm naturally a more reserved person.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes I feel like every social media is posted, hey, I haven't mentioned Season Songs, so hello.
By the way.
But I don't mind doing that also because I do love it. Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine who's a writer, when I published my first book, sent me like a little meme of this like otter mom with her baby, like holding it out and going, I made this.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, okay, that's how I need to approach this. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like,
okay. Got it.
Because
got
there's it. All the expectations as well, isn't there? Are people going to like it? Are they going to hate it? Are they, you know, because you naturally want people to enjoy that. So, yeah. But yeah, I feel like I've enjoyed the whole process a little bit more because I just experienced it, I think. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And I mean, it is unique in that people might not tell you your baby is ugly, but they will go on Amazon and tell you your book is ugly.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So that's a whole different aspect of it. Do you read your reviews?
Do you know what? I'll sometimes have a quick glance, but I can always say, so I write for several websites, and for God's sake, because I can always remember I put out an article, and it was in the early days of, you know, releasing my writing into the wild, and, you know, they share their work on social media, and of course you share it, and you get tagged in any comments, and in those early days, I did used to read the comments, and then, you know, you think, oh my God. So the best piece of advice my editor at Gods and Radicals gave me, Reed, he said, you know, you really don't have to, first of all, you don't even have to read the comments. Mm-hmm. And he said, and if you do, he says, you definitely don't have to respond to them. You know, he said, we've published the work, we obviously stand by what you've said. And, you know, so that it's just kind of gives you that little bit of, I don't know. I guess it all comes down to experience. And no, I don't really read the reviews, though I do welcome all meaningful good ones.
Right.
But, you know, you know, and I also kind of like to take it in good faith. So, you know, some books, I might pick up a book and I might not like the way it's written, or it might just not be for me. So I also think maybe it's the same if I do ever get a bad one. So it's just one of those things.
Yeah. I always think about, you know, the reviews are really for other readers.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think there can be some criticism in reviews that can be helpful. I mean, I can't change that book. Obviously, it's already out in the wild. But, you know, to think about with the next book, like, I do think that can be helpful. I mean, just kind of personally, like, what several people with my first series, like, there are too many names for too many people. And initially, I kind of was like, well, you can read Game of Thrones and these people have completely made up names. I was like, these people all have real names. They're just living in, you know, like, and I kind of had a little chip on my shoulder about it. And then I was like, well, maybe they have a point. You know, maybe I didn't do a good job of like introducing the characters so that they were memorable with their name and all that. So it's something to think about later with other books. But I do think it's, you know, it's easy to like let one bad review, if you take it to heart, just like sock your energy, your creative energy. And, you know, like, again, another friend of mine who's a writer was like, a bad review is street cred. That means like, it's not just your family bigging you up on Amazon, you know, like it's important to kind of realize that, you know, at least made somebody feel something enough that they felt like they needed to go online to tell you that you're shit.
They've taken the effort and time to do that, so you've definitely inspired something.
It might be a bad thing, but you've inspired it. So you made them feel something, which is what we all hope we do.
Absolutely. And I think as I've got older, I've just learned to just, you know, take it on the chin a bit, maybe laugh about it.
I mean, you know, it's like, you know, once I started publishing, I kind of stopped writing reviews for other people. Like, unless I do like a swap with somebody or something, I don't really write reviews anymore because I feel like it's just too easy for this to come back and bite you on the butt. but it's interesting to me, like, the things that people latch on to. Like, when you read a review and you're like, I don't even remember writing that. It's like, did you read my book? Are you talking about my book? Like, I don't remember that at all.
I think, like, you know, we have to remember that how we interact with anything is shaped by our own experiences. Mm-hmm. And it might be it's just not for some people. And maybe they just have, you know, it is what it is. But it's certainly an experience that you kind of have to get used to, I think, is. It's so surreal having to, you know, listen or read other people's opinions of something that is probably quite, you know, precious to you. It's just a weird headspace to have to get used to. It's a bit like stepping into the boxing ring. You know, it's weird. It's not something you normally have to do in life. So,
Well, I mean, and you know, that's like from blogging and like, if you, you know, are brave enough to have an opinion online, somebody's going to have something to say about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I won't say the rather vulgar saying about opinions, but I'm thinking it. Everybody has one. They're like a certain body part. I shall say no more.
Yes. Do you find that like your blogging is really different than like writing longer form books?
Yes, I think because when people are, you know, I feel like you invest more in a book. Not only financially in purchasing the book, but, you know, you're kind of investing the time it takes to read the book and the energy it takes to read the book. You know, you're investing in what that person is saying, you know, and especially, you know, if you're trying a new author, maybe someone you've not tried before, it is always a bit of a risk because you think, what if I don't like their style, or what if it's just not for me? Or so I do feel there is a difference in that writing. So I don't know. Yeah, there's definitely a difference, but it's kind of, I still feel like creatively you know, deep down at heart, they're still kind of your babies, whether they're ugly or not. They're all beautiful to their mamas.
That's right. Totally. So what's the plan? What's on the docket for you now, writing-wise? What are you just taking a breather or?
Kind of, well, I always say that, but then, you know, I'm the kind of person that when we sit down in, of an evening, you know, and like I say, like my children are grown up now and they're all doing their own things, you know, and so of an evening, even if we're just sat down and, you know, the TV's on and it's just downtime, I find myself just having a notebook to hand. And so there's always some form of writing going on. So, you know, there's the regular blogs that I write for on my own website. And, you know, beginnings of new books, kind of, you find your mind always turning up new ideas, and sometimes you can't help but prod a few of them and see what happens. So yeah
always percolating. My favorite is when you get a great new idea in the middle of a giant project that you're trying to finish.
I love that.
Like you have to wait in line.
Yes. So sometimes, like, I have notebooks, random notebooks everywhere. I'm probably like a bit of a notebook hoarder, but they're just so useful because I find, have you ever done it before where you think, oh, that idea is fantastic, I'm never going to forget that. Lo and behold, 5 hours later, you think, oh no, what was it?
What was that?
Yeah. If you're lucky, it comes back. And so I'm a big fan of just like jotting down random words. It might be an idea, it might just be a phrase that kind of just pops up and you think, oh, that's good, you know.
I should post this online at some point. I have a different notebook for lots of different things.
Yes.
And so on the left side of my desk right now, there's a stack of like books and notebooks that always looks like it's about to fall over. And I always think of it like that's what my brain looks like. It's just externalized.
I like to call it organized chaos. I too am an owner of said piles of piles of books.
Yeah, I mean, between like doing research for books and reading for the podcast and just reading for myself, and I, you know, it's funny to be like, I have to read a lot for the podcast because my goal when I started the podcast was I would read the most recent book by everybody who was on, which, when you do it a podcast a week, that's a lot of reading. And yeah,
which is great, but also time consuming and hard work, I guess.
Yeah. So it's a lot of reading. And then I also am like 3 book clubs, like a person who clearly does not think about their time in any way, shape, or form. And I'm trying to write 2 books at the same time. And I'm like, what is going on in my brain?
So, I love it. Yeah. I love it. Organized chaos.
Yeah, but I thought, you know, there's always that thing. If you want something done, give it to a busy person.
Yeah.
And I think there's some truth to it. Like once you get to that level of like busyness, you just kind of do it, which is really frustrating because I've been down with COVID for like 3 weeks and I was slow. Yeah. It was just hard to focus to read. Like I didn't realize how much it was impacting my brain.
Yeah.
Like, it's been really hard to focus to read.
I know, because at the time when I had COVID, it was kind of in the, you know, it was at the time where you like work could not give you enough time off, which was great. And so as a reader, you know, sometimes when you're ill off work and you think I'm ill, but maybe I can maybe read a book or flick through a magazine or even just watch a couple of episodes of a series. I think with COVID, I couldn't even be bothered to do any of that. And it's all the stuff like that I find quite relaxing anyway. So it's really tough with COVID. So bless you.
Yeah, I had a hard time just like following things. So literally the first week when I was just miserable, I watched 2 old seasons of Great British Bake Off Professionals on Netflix because I didn't have to really follow anything. You know, I could just watch people bake.
Yeah.
I was like, I have like 10 books to read. What am I doing? But I just couldn't. I couldn't even follow an audiobook very well because my brain would just like trail off or something. So. Yeah, it's a weird thing. Oh. But on the up, so that's good.
Good.
It just mean we started our season late. So you and I are talking, like I said, in bulk, and this will come out in May. But we have a little backlog because of that, because we were all down. It's bad when you live with your editor and he also has COVID.
So. Oh, dear. Oh, no.
But you're doing podcasts too.
Yes, Wild Witch Podcast. They're not very long. My idea with them, I love all kinds of podcasts, but I find myself sometimes, I don't always have a lot of time to be able to listen to a long one at length. So sometimes I just like little short, sharp ones that are quite informative. So that's kind of what I'm aiming at, you know. Most of them, I don't think any episode really longer than half an hour. Sometimes I have guests, sometimes I'll talk about a particular theme. Sometimes it's just things that have been coming up a lot or, you know, but yeah, the idea is that you can listen to them on your way to work or while you're hoovering up or washing up or, you know, it's just, sometimes you just get a bit bored listening to music, don't you? You know, when you're doing your household tasks and stuff or
anything. You know, a little more engagement. I enjoy your podcast. It's just pleasant to listen to you talk. You have a lovely voice.
Oh, thank you.
So I do enjoy it. And I highly recommend it to other folks. Is the downside though, when you realize when you write and you make a podcast, you don't always have time to listen to other people's podcasts. But yeah, but it is nice when I get to do that.
Same.
And you were part of the BBC Witch podcast.
Yes. Do you know what? I feel so lucky to have been involved in that. Because I think, you know, India, firstly, did a fantastic job. And I think what I loved about it, because it was Marcus from Llewellyn who like first said, you know, they're interested. And, you know, sometimes when you hear BBC or mainstream press, you think, oh, God, what angle are they going to take? You know, but Marcus had said, you know, I've spoken to them. They seem it seems like a really good project. So I got in touch and yeah, I was so glad I did, you know, because I think what I really love about it is the way India is approaching it. So she's wouldn't necessarily describe herself as a witch. She is maybe, you know, witch interested or maybe witch adjacent, you know. So she was really kind of exploring what witchcraft meant. And I liked that. Each episode had, so they were all inspired by the Wheel of the Year. But each episode had a kind of different aspect of witchcraft. So for me, the whole series did a really good job of really breaking down the stereotype of what a witch is. And actually, you know, there's no one thing of what a witch is. And I think she really highlighted that beautifully and quite poignantly at times. So, yeah. It was amazing to be a part of. I loved it so much.
Yeah, no, it's so beautifully done. And she's so open about like her skepticism and her want to believe and like what really resonated with her. Like I felt like she was really vulnerable, like in her own presentation of it. And then all of the people she talked to were amazing. And it's the BBC, so the production value is incredible. And so it's just like this beautiful podcast. And it's just like a comfort listen now. Like I'll just go listen to an episode when I need to like calm down about something because it's just so well done.
Same. I feel the same. And I think, you know, I agree. It's just the way she handled the whole thing. Because, you know, she came to my house from London, which I know when people necessarily from outside of the UK think of the UK, they automatically think of London. But like London's about a 3-4 hour, maybe 3 hour car drive away, you know, or a long train journey with multiple stops, maybe, or there might be a direct line. But so she came to my house, and it's always weird inviting strangers into your house. But straight away, you know, her and Tatum, who was the technical person, Tatum was a witch herself anyway. So, you know, already that kind of, it was almost like welcoming, you know, a sister of the art into your home. So yeah, it was really meaningful. We made like spirit bottles and we had chats about lots of different things. So it was just a really lovely kind of, it was almost like we weren't recording anything at all and we were just friends having a chat and, you know, we had a fire in the garden and it was lovely.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. No, it showed in the production. I thought that she just seemed like very easy to talk to. And like you said, witch curious, maybe, I guess.
Yeah.
So. Awesome. And speaking of talking to friends, I feel like I could talk to you for days. And, same. Unfortunately, you know, we do try to keep it to an hour. Although I think it, Marshall from Southern Bramble, who's written his own book, had a thing on social media recently about, I don't know why people want shorter podcasts. Like, I love podcasts that are 3 or 4 hours. And I'm like, I love them, but I can't listen to them in one sitting.
Yeah. Yeah, the eternal problem of time.
Yeah, it's like, I love when people get that deep and nerdy, but also, like, I listen to them often before I go to bed at night, and I can't listen to a 4-hour podcast or listen up till 2 in the morning. So, which does happen. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it shouldn't happen on the regular. So, in light of that, like I said, this will come out in May. So, do you want to tell people what you're up to and where they can find you and where they can find the books and all that good stuff?
Yes. So Season Songs is available everywhere now, as is Witch Life. Witch Life's been out for a while anyway. But wherever you buy your books from, you can order them if they don't have them in stock. I would say support independent bookshops if you can, because, you know, those guys are great. But wherever you normally buy your books, you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, though I'm less active on Twitter nowadays. I go on there every now and then. But it's Emma Catherine Wild Witch on all of those. And on TikTok too. But yeah, TikTok, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch.
It is fun to watch. It's kind of its own time suck. Yeah, I'll have links in the show notes where people can get to this a little easier. And then, so to take us out, I will play our little game of chance. And you've done this before, so you know.
I know, I do enjoy it.
So for new listeners, if you're new, this first episode you listen to, I am going to roll a die. And I joke that this is my way to get my Scorpio nature out to talk about stuff we're not supposed to talk about. So depending on what number I'll get, you'll get a question about death, sex, religion, politics, or money. And I was trying to remember what you got last time, and I couldn't remember. I'll have to go check. Oh,
I can't remember.
But I wrote new questions, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, exciting.
All right. And if I roll a 6, you get to pick what you want.
Oh, nice.
4, politics. You can also pass if you want.
Nothing is taboo. I'm a, you know.
You're good. I like the spicy stuff. All right. So I was thinking about, like, in trying to wrap this into the book, like, thinking about, like, seasons and cycles and things like that. And I feel like, you know, we're in an interesting season politically, I guess, is one way to look at it. And I was, you know, whether that's a cycle or a pendulum swing, I'm not sure. But so what, like, in this year that has the potential to be so very fraught politically, what advice would you give witches to, like, ground or, you know, influence that cycle if they want to? Like, what would you tell witches, like, what to do in this particular kind of cycle and season?
I always think, and I know it's, like, corny, but I always think know thyself is so important in this. So, you know, but because it's so easy, you're right, is it a pendulum swing or a cycle? It's so easy to get caught up in, you know, and I think politics generally by nature divides people. It makes people choose this or that and kind of ignores all the nuance in between, you know. And I think most people politically aren't one thing or another. They, you know, obviously you do get people who are the extremes of that, but I think for most people they probably, you know, it's depending on, you know, what's going on in their lives and all of that kind of stuff. So I think knowing what you want for yourself and what's important to you and what aims you have is important, because then you can, you know, looking at things accurately and realistically allows us to kind of prepare for them. So I think know thyself, know what you want, and just trust in your power and your strength that comes with knowing what you want. I think grounding wise, you know, I think it's such an important part of any kind of, it's the pre-magical work, isn't it? It's like the pre-workout almost of a ritual, the grounding, because that's where we're going to get our energy from and kind of stabilize ourselves and root ourselves in what's important. So I think for me, going outside, connecting with where we live, recognizing the magic in the mundane, in that moment of being present, I think allows us to put things into perspective, and things that might have seemed, you know, massively worrying. It's not that they disappear, but I feel like by taking that time to connect to the bigger things in life, it allows us to kind of put these things into perspective and realize that actually we do have the power to affect, maybe not the massive outcomes, but there are always things we can do. I always think if people do want to help in any way, I always think looking to where we can help in our local communities is a great thing. I always think mutual aid and solidarity starts in the very street where we live. And I always think just connecting with the land also means connecting with other people who live there as well. They are also beings of that land, whether they feel that connection or not. So I think those things are important for me, community and just knowing thyself and what we want for ourselves.
Oh, that's lovely and perfect, I think, because I do think this year has the potential, at least, you know, I mean, it's not just the States that has elections this year. There's elections all over the world this year. And it's just a weird.
I always think, I always say people are not their governments, and, you know, the things that go on politically aren't necessarily mirrored in the real lives of everyday people. So,
Oh, wait, is that true? Yeah. Like, we are not our governments. Yeah. And I think, I know that's probably a good reminder for some people right now, maybe not our listeners in particular. I want to think you all are beautiful and perfect. But yeah, I mean, I do think people sometimes conflate those things in a way that's not good for anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes we all just need to go and stand barefoot in the grass and just remind ourselves of what is.
Yeah, very true. Oh, Emma, thank you so much. This has been a treat and lovely to talk with you. And I'm excited for whatever comes next.
Oh, me too. I've had a great time. Thank you for having me on. I always feel like I could literally get a glass of wine and just chat all night. But alas.
Yes. Constraints. Yes. Maybe sometimes I keep threatening, like, when traveling is a little easier and maybe not so fraught, I need to spend some research time in the UK. And I'm like, I'm just going to do a circuit of all the beautiful people I've met when I go. So maybe at some point we'll get to do that.
Yes. I always feel I want to do that as well. Like, wouldn't it be amazing? Like,
I'm going to put that out in the universe that it will happen in the next couple of years. And we will get to just talk into the night with a glass of wine. Sounds perfect.
Yes. Perfect.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Witchlit is a production of Thousand Volt Press and is edited by Julian Rashke. Our intro music is Cosmic Glow by Andrew Kay, and our outro music is Voices by Alexander Shenekar. Transcripts and all our previous episodes are available at witchlitpod.com, and you can follow us on Instagram and Threads at witchlitpod. Please help other witches find us by leaving a rating or a view wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening to and reading Witchlit.